Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is 215-383-3872. Like I always say, the brothers enjoy talking to each other. We enjoy talking to ourselves, but we would like to hear from you every now and then. Ain't that right, Robert?
Every now and then. We got the Lord to bless
And I'm calling from the Holler Center tonight, man. I like it down here, man. There's a lot going on down here.
There's a lot going on. You should like it. That's a place, man. It's a place of activity.
I just can't answer the phone, though, right now.
What's going on?
I always assume, Robert, that everybody knows I'm on the radio at 7 o'clock on Wednesday.
You know what happened, though? You know what happened to Leon sometimes?
They forget.
They'll call Holler. They'll call Holler thinking they're calling onto the show. That's what's going on. I'm telling you.
You think?
They said, yeah, that's what's happening. I knew it happened to me. People be calling my office. They don't be calling Radio 1. They be calling over to my office in Largo. I tried to get on there, and the ladies didn't know what I was talking about. I said, oh, boy. What number did you call?
And you'd be like, you the one slow. Let me ask you this, man. Do you have a fire stick? Do you know what a fire stick is?
It's one of those things that like light a fireplace. Like, it's not that thing to light a fireplace, is it?
No.
You mean the stuff like files? It's like get moving and stuff on your TV.
Yeah. The trick about, I have fire stick, right? You know, I got everything, though.
Right.
I'm one of these crazy people. I'm going to have a fire stick. I'm going to have
cable.
I'm going to have DirecTV or one of those other guys, dish or somebody. I'm gonna have
buy,
that. I'm gonna have a smart TV. I'm gonna have it all.
Comcast.
I'm just crazy.
Why you got
like
so many?
That, man.
Why you got so many of them though?
Because here's what happens. People tell me, you need a fire stick.
Right.
You don't need the that other stuff. You just need a fire stick.
Yeah.
And then when I get the fire stick, I said, man, I can't get Channel 9. I can't watch Channel 9 news. So I call them to turn the thing back on. Then you have the fire stick.
Leon,
it's,
everybody
it's
I know,
that.
Everybody I know who has a fire stick goes through the same thing. They get the fire stick. Then they start talking about all the stuff they're missing now. They can't get BET. They can't get the news now. They can't get the weather. They can't get... Then they end up getting fire stick and everything else.
Exactly.
A racket.
That's what happened. I'm going to tell you what's cool about fire stick. This is what happened last night, man. I told... I'm crazy. I'm telling you I'm crazy. I got a fire stick in the den. I got a fire stick in the bedroom. But anyway, I was plugging my new fire stick up. And I told him, and that thing said, say something like, play something on Fire Stick, you know, that Alexa.
Right.
It's got that Alexa thing going on. So I said, okay, let me try this. I said, okay, Alexa, play Columbo on Fire Stick. Man, Alexa pulled up. She pulled up episode 1 from season 1.
Good
I mean, she pulled the whole first season of Columbo, man. Needless to say, I didn't sleep at all last night.
That must have been back towards slavery, first season, man. Probably had a slave.
It wasn't quite slavery, man, but those Negroes looked like they were from that movie, Get Out. You know, it was hard to watch, man.
Yeah, these old movies are tough, boy.
There's a lot of
shows. Black folks were not represented well back then in those old shows. Either we were missing or we misrepresented. You know what's interesting, though, Leon?
They did it wrong. Huh?
But you know what? We weren't at all in Andy Griffin. You ever notice that? We didn't even make an appearance. That show was on the air for 10 years.
We didn't walk down the street. We weren't even amazed because people in that demographic didn't have maids.
Yeah,
that's
so
all they needed us for back then, you know.
So
they didn't have any rich people on Andy Griffith.
Yeah, so Oprah didn't have no little Trayvons and Aisha's running around there with him. It was all Opie and his
exactly.
ilk.
He didn't have any little brothers and sister friends. He wasn't like during Little Rascals at all.
Yeah, that's how do you get so many black folks on there? That's kind of a mystery. Buckwheat.
Probably better off if they didn't. They don't look like buckwheat. Stan.
And
Curtis, man, he doesn't come in. We woke Curtis up. What's up, Rev?
Hey, Kevin. What's up, Rev? Curtis
and Bo's in the head of the little boys.
Yeah, what was
so
up with that?
Maybe best they didn't go there.
How did buckwheat get Bo's in his head? How did buckwheat get bows in his head? What's up with that?
Exactly. Yeah, that was what you call the
effemination of the black man early.
Is it demasculization? Is there a word such as that? But
that first word Robert said. What was that, Robert?
Effemination.
The effemination.
Whatever. Yeah. But in any event, it became a common practice around that time to either make a black man either look like he's a half woman, less man in any way imaginable. If you could do it through, you know, not that this should have anything to do, be a slap in the face against the LGBTQ community, but, you know, white people would often do what they could to take away the masculinity of black men during that period, make them look stupid, make them look dumb, make them look like they can't do anything but either be fearful or bowing or, in this case, put bows in their heads or whatever. So it might have been best that Andy Griffin didn't even go there.
But Stammy had on a derby. Stammy had a derby on.
He was the coolest of the one, man. I will give him that. That was my hero a little bit.
That was a mystery.
I used to love it. But you see, Simon wouldn't be on there every week. But he was a special Negro.
Boy, that's crazy. Especially
today when Simon's on there.
That's funny. Hey, man, speaking of race, race is in the air. Race is in the atmosphere, unfortunately.
Yeah, man, okay, I'm going to have to get off the radio soon. I have a situation I'm going to have to handle here, but I did want to speak to some of that racism that's going on. I was talking to Leon a little earlier before we even get to the mass shooting stuff. I was just reading where in Montana, a man, I think it was a 39-year-old white male, the young man, the child was also white. It happened to be a 13-year-old white young male. They were doing the national anthem, and the young man did not take his hat off and pledge. And so the man came over and knocked him down, pushed him head first, ended up fracturing his skull because he supposedly disrespected the flag.
Good God Almighty.
Yep. Now you tell me what kind of stuff we're dealing with now. Almost going to disrespectfully kill a young boy for supposedly disrespecting the flag, when in fact he didn't even, I think he said he either forgot, he didn't even do it deliberately. I mean, and I guess you can imagine what would have happened if there had been a protest around. But he just happened not to take his little hat off and was thrown to the ground, head first, fractured his skull. That just happened.
It's like if you don't show some respect, I'm gonna kill you. Wait a minute, hold on.
Be free.
Something wrong with that picture.
What does the flag represent? This is evil flag worship. I mean, what does it represent? It's first of all, it used to act like it represented freedom. So we're gonna kill you if you try to be free to decide what you're gonna do when the national anthem is playing. If you try to use your freedom during that time, we're going to kill you because you're disrespecting the flag of freedom, or supposed freedom, which we all know is all intertwined in the racism and stupidity. And then we also know it was exacerbated during the time of Kaepernick and the NFL protests and Trump jumping in to tell them to fire the sons of bitches and all this other crazy stuff. So Trump got his hands on a lot of stuff right now, fellas.
And let me just say quick,
brothers. I don't care what the Mueller report says. This man has to go. I mean, there's just so much that doesn't have anything to do with the Mueller report that would say that Trump should not be sitting in the White House right now. And I just get so sick that everybody keep trying to take it back to see what they can get out of the Mueller report and take their time with impeachment or bringing even questions of impeachment, because we need to get more information about this and more information about that. In the meantime, people are just dying all across the country because you got a fool in the White House exacerbating racism and ignorance.
Curtis, what do you call this? I mean, you can't call this some racism. What do you call this? Foolishness?
We don't buy the notion that it's a mental health issue. Of course, we're all in need of improved mental health, but all of us are not running around trying to kill people and try to pick out certain groups and hate them and murder them or neutralize them. Or, you know, that's something else. That's evil. It's racist. It's hateful. It had very little to do with mental health. And to now start to put it under the blanket of mental health is also offensive to people who are, in fact, struggling with mental health issues. And then they'll be labored when people find out they're taking certain medications, or when people find out that they're struggling and going to do the right thing is to go to the psychiatrist, then they get this label of being a dangerous person, when in fact these people are just wicked and evil.
Well, Leon, I would look at it this way. When you consider the fact that the country was built on a racial orthodoxy of white supremacy, and the flag represents that, anybody that disrespects that is viewed as a threat. So the young man that was attacked, even though he was of the same race, he was still showing deference to this symbol of white supremacy.
Absolutely.
In his eyes. so. Even though, like I say, we all salute this flag, we all pay homage to it, but when you consider the history behind it and the slavery and the Native Americans being extinct, then in this guy's eye, the one who did the assault, he's saying, you're assaulting my belief system. And how dare you not respect and stand up for the flag, because this flag has done so much for me as far as eliminating people and marginalizing people and really upholding my white supremacy. So it doesn't matter what race you are.
And, so they're going to look like the freedom fighters back in the 70s and 60s. You know what I mean? So, kind of like if you got caught riding around with Negroes to help fight against racism, they killed you too, that kind of thing.
Like freedom So they should have seen that should have been also a part of it. It was like, are you siding with them? You know, that type of thing.
Right.
So that creates that level of hatred as well. Yep.
Well, Leon, you put a different, you put a very interesting question out here today. Is it too late for America to save itself? That's pretty deep, that brother. I tell you what, I know we got to go, but I do want to point something out real fast before Curtis gets off here, because I might want to get his feedback on it. We're in a very precarious position in our history of this country. And I'll tell you why, because when you're a student of history, as I have been, that was my major, political science, history, and government, when I was in undergrad. And I harken back to 1938 during Kristallnacht. It was actually, the English version is called Kristallnacht, and that's when the, almost like militias, it would be, I guess it would be similar to today's militias, these groups, who were not necessarily government groups, but they were funded and they were sanctioned by the government. They went around and burned and destroyed 267 synagogues in Germany. They destroyed 7,000 businesses. They killed hundreds of Jewish people, and it ultimately led to the Holocaust that killed 6 million Jews. Now, the pretext of that was the assassination of a Nazi diplomat, a guy called Ernst von Rost, by a 17-year-old Polish Jewish boy. So that was like the reason that they claimed that they did all this madness. Then in more recent history, in 1994, we had the Rwandan genocide, where this, the pretext for this, of course, was the assassination of the president, Habyarimana. His plane was shot down. And, of course, that led to 800,000 Tutsis being slaughtered by the Hutu population. And, of course, the weapon of choice was the machete. This happened back in 1994 in April of that year. Now, this is what these things have in common. So this kind of brings us up to the present. There was the use of insightful language. Of course, Hitler did his Mein Kampf. And then in Rwanda, they had the radio station calling the Tutsis cockroaches, and they were siding with the whites. And so it got everybody all excited. They were mad to begin with. Then they created these groups. These groups would go out and do the dirty work while the government was pretty much set back and said, hey, that's not us. So they would feign innocence. So you had the insightful language. The other groups would go out and do the dirty work, like the Kristallnacht, these militias in Germany, and the folks with the machetes in Rwanda. And then there's an event that has to precipitate, that has to, the pretext, as it, like the case of the assassination of the German diplomat and the shooting down of the plane in Rwanda. The only thing, so we've checked off three of the boxes, really. Insightful language, the thugs going out assassinating, killing people and mowing people down in Kmart's, and then, of course, Trump and his group are feigning innocence. We had nothing to do with it. I can't blame me. That's what Fox and Hannity and Tucker Carlson all are saying right now. Hey, nothing we did caused this. Only thing missing now is something that they're going to create. Somebody's going to get shot, or somebody's going to get, they'll probably do it themselves, but they'll do something to create this torch that's going to set it off. And then that's when the slaughter starts. So we're at that point. We've checked off three of the five boxes. So what, this is why it's important right now to nip this in the bud, because it's going down that dangerous, slippery slope. history.
Yeah.
History is not in our favor right now.
Yeah.
It's enough to make you pause because it's too similar to what we've seen in the past. Matter of fact, even I don't know if you guys heard President Obama's response to the shootings of the weekend. He actually referenced those two of those in his speech. He referenced the Holocaust and he referenced Rwanda because Obama knows history.
Right. Yeah, and of course they got the nut upset. He didn't call the nut's name, I don't think, but he said, well, old Bush should never say nothing about Obama. Why he saying something about me?
So, yeah, and Obama never said anything about Bush. So this is that we're at that point in history where reasonable people. Now we've seen a few peeling back. We've seen a few Republicans. I mean, it's far too few. It's like it's almost so few it doesn't even count. But they are the ones that's going to have to stop this. We can't do it, really. Black folks definitely can't do it. Because every time we talk, they just get angrier. You know what I'm saying?
That's
they just
true.
Get angrier.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear from us. They don't hear from Raul Castro and not what's the guy? Joaquin Castro and the one that's running for president. They don't want to hear from them either. It's going to take Kevin McCarthy. I know this is really crazy to even mention this. It's going to take Lindsey Graham. It's going to take Mitch McConnell. People like that, as absurd as this may sound. That's why it's almost like wishing it would rain in hell. But that's what it's going
to
really
take.
In order for them to do it,
it's going to take their constituents or their base to do it.
Yep.
So the base is going to have to be rattled.
Reasonable
right.
people is going to have to step up, and it's not going to be.
Right.
This is a black folks didn't create this problem, and we can't fix it. We can put the pressure on them. We can encourage them. We can show them the way, but they're going to have to fix this.
Yeah, it's going to take their like Lindsey Graham's. The people who vote for Lindsey Graham are going to have to. Realize it's crazy because as long as those guys feel like they have the power, they still have these people behind them, they're going to be reelected. They're not going to change.
Well, man, they just don't change.
Go ahead, Curtis.
That's good history, Robert. It's really history. It's relevant. It's all that. That's why history is important. People need to learn history, not to just remember dates and certain faces, but to remember what led to atrocities and what led to the fall of societies,
yeah.
Mass murder. That's what we need to know history to help to avoid certain things. But we're so dumb as a nation. We just keep doing the same thing. We've seen this horror movie before, and we keep playing replay. I mean,
you know what, Curtis?
Check
this out, Curtis. I remember about this was probably about a year into Trump's presidency, and of course, now history just hitting me. It's like water. It's like breathing. It's air to me. So when I hear certain things, it's like I don't have to go back and look up a book. It's because it's just part of my training. I said this about a year and a half ago. I said. That guy's going to get somebody killed.
Yep.
That guy's
going to
get... I said that guy's going to get somebody killed.
Yeah.
Because I know history.
They came right to Fairville and punched the guy in the face right after he said something. If somebody punched somebody in the face, he'll pay the bail.
Yeah.
And he came right to Fairville and got punched. Yep, black guy got punched right in the face.
Yeah.
So, we saw it working, whatever he's trying to make work. We saw it working. Now, one other thing that I wanted to say, I've been saying for a long time, sometimes I put it in my posts, that I heard someone saying today, it might have been the a former Homeland Security, Rice, might have been heard it said it today. But I've been saying it, or at least it was brought to her attention, about Trump is now trying to kind of like been cutting funding that would normally go to domestic terrorism. People are starting to finally, in different levels of government, to start to draw the parallel between ISIS and domestic terrorism and start seeing that this attention should be given, the budget and so on and so forth, in the defense department should start being provided more toward domestic terrorism. And I've been saying that for a long time. And so I think that's the route we're going to have to really, really go. We're going to really have to keep driving that message.
Yeah.
Because what's getting ready to happen cannot be fought by us with guns. What's
You're
about
right.
to happen? They've already gotten the weapons off the shelf. They bought them all. Even if you start this stuff about banning certain weapons, they already have them. Okay? So they're not going
right.
to go back and take it back. They're not going to take anybody's weapon back.
And you're right, Curtis. We can't
they
go back
like,
and catch up. We can't catch up.
Yeah.
We can't catch up.
Yeah, we lined up around the block buying guns.
Well, I don't know what this is going to do. Any legislation that's going to come out and say, okay, we're banning weapons. Okay, the store has already been robbed. There are no weapons that they don't have already, okay? So let's talk real. And there are a lot of black folk who are not really – so excited about the banned weapon thing, sadly, because they feel like, well, darn, the only people that are going to stop from getting weapons are going to be us. And
God,
so they have the weapons. They have every imaginable weapon of mass destruction. We let it happen. Okay, well, the nation was asleep. It started really under Obama. Because what happened is when they noticed that a black president, see, if another thing about history, there is always a deadly backlash to black success. So when Obama was elected, that was another thing about history. People were ready to kill him. They had started buying weapons. They started making things up about he's going to take your guns. They started every racist thing that could be said about a black man, a monkey, and all this other stuff. He's a Muslim. He's from Africa. He's not one of us. They poured it on, man. And so that's when you couldn't buy a gun. They were all bought under the Obama administration. The worst thing that could happen was to have a racist to come behind that and exacerbate the purchases that had already taken place. They had the guns.
The people already got the guns. Yep.
At least
You're
under
right.
Obama, a lot of them were just shooting, you know, in general. They just shoot. They just go in somewhere. These young boys will get their parents' gun. The parents bought them for racism, but the young guys will go get them and just shoot anywhere, you know. But now Trump has people thinking more about shooting people of color. You know, that's the dangerous thing now. First, they were indiscriminate in their shooting. They just go in a theater and just shoot up everybody because those young guys were getting the guns that the racist parents bought. And they just go up in there. They weren't thinking about why their mama and their daddy bought the guns. I'm not saying all white folk bought guns for that reason, but I'm just saying those young guys will get the gun and go out and shoot up anybody. But now Trump has come into town, and Trump's danger is he's pouring gasoline on a powder keg that was already created by his predecessor. I mean, his predecessor did it innocently by just being an intelligent brother who wanted to do the right thing in a racist country.
Right.
So now you got this racist that's come behind him. We are in a dangerous situation, folks.
Yeah,
that's
my thing is we got to go back to the Defense Department and say, look, all this money we've been putting in defense, you got to come out here and deal with this. You know, we put all these trillions of dollars in the Defense Department. This is for you guys to pray now. This is not for us.
You know what, Leon?
So
I told Leon I had some positive news, and you just articulated very nicely. Because when I thought about when they were talking about this, I thought about you when they were actually saying this when Trump made his little speech the other day, And he was directing the FBI to start looking into these terrorist organizations. I say, if nothing else comes out of this, if we could just get that, that is going
to
be
–
that would turn the tide.
We got to push that harder than banning weapons. We got to push We have to push the allocation of the defense to go after these guys. That's what you got to do.
And that's why – that's exactly what I mean, Leon and Curtis, when I said we can't fix this. This is not something that we have the power to fix. I hate to – I'm not saying we're powerless. I am saying we can't go out – we can't outgun, outfight, take that off the table. It's just not going to happen.
In fact, Robert, this should have really been the argument even during the 60s and 50s. I mean, I know it was less likely then, but – I don't think it was raised enough about how, because black folk were just so anxious to get into the military and join the military. They sent them off all overseas, and they come home and be hung and all this other stuff. That should have told them right there, wait a minute. We got to deal with some stuff at home. We got to use this military force here, because I can't go all over across the Vietnam and then come back and get hung when I get home after I'm gone past. I finally survived Vietnam to get home, and we got so many cases of whether it was Vietnam, North Korea, or whatever. But there's just so many instances where black folk went off the fight and then came back home and were killed by racist terrorists. So we have to make that case. We had to connect those dots. Military spending, money spent, black folk, Latino, they're all putting money into that budget. They're all putting money into that pot. It is time to use that money to defend, domestic. We have to defend black and brown people from terrorism, whether it's coming from ISIS or whether it's coming from white supremacists.
Well, I will say,
amen to that,
brother. If there's a silver lining, and it's hard to find anything positive in what happened this past week, but if there's anything to hang our hopes on, is the fact that now we can move some of these legislators, some of these Congress people, senators, presidential candidates, to keep the foot on the pedal of redirecting these resources to stamp out this scourge of white supremacy and violence.
Yep, that's the solution right there. I'm telling you, banning weapons not gonna do it. That's the solution, because they got the weapons. They ain't giving them back.
And they're not giving them up.
Nobody's
you can't even find them.
They're not going to give them up. I don't want to get in that fight of trying to get them to give them up. So
Leon Curtis, there is 400 million weapons, guns in this United States. There's only 300 and something million people. 400 million guns. There's more guns than people. We're talking about counting babies and everything.
And I know people that don't have one. So a lot of people got a lot of guns. Brothers, we're going to have to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We have some good information, good history lessons, good civic lessons. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. The number to call is 215-383-3872. Or you can go listen live at www.brothersforreal.com. That's BROTHERSFORREAL.com. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Leon. Stop.
Yes, sir.
Get off.
All right, brother. So you got to run.
Go ahead.
Bye. Mulvaney ended up hearing a panel discussion that he actually might not have heard had our satellite worked on time that time. But he clearly, Eddie Glaude, was reacting to you in particular in that interview. What did you hear from him?
First of all, I can give less than a damn what Mick Mulvaney thinks about what I say, to be honest with you. He can't even acknowledge that it was a domestic terrorist act. How many times did you use the phrase and he wouldn't acknowledge it? What did he say? He said it was a person who was crazy, a nut with guns, right? And that's always the case, right? If it was a Muslim, it would have been a terrorist act. Donald Trump would have already been on television, not a tweet. He would have already done a press conference, right? But when it's white men engaging in this sort of action, we get this sort of account, right, that we want to go to their mental health. Let's just stipulate that they're crazy. Let's stipulate that they're crazy.
Everybody who kills people are crazy.
Something's wrong. Let's stipulate to that.
Yeah.
But there's an ideology at work here. When you use the same language that we've heard, the same language that we heard in the clip, and let me say this, for a lot of folk in this country who are black and brown, for a lot of folk in this country who are not white men, it feels as if some white men have lost their damn minds, Chuck, and we have to bear the burden of it.
Man, that was Leon, that was the quote of the year. I could give less than a damn what Mick Mulvaney said.
Who was that talking?
That was Eddie Glaude. He's a professor. He's a regular on he's a talking head. This was on Meet the Press this past Sunday.
Right.
They had Trump's chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, on talking about, he was really criticizing the panel who were pretty much pointing the finger back at Trump. And so the guy, he messed around and picked on Eddie Glaude. And, of course, Chuck Todd said, well, you know, Eddie, he was really talking about you. He said, I could give less than a damn what Mick
That's pretty good. That's
man,
not much.
Drop the mic on that one.
Now, people, you know, I don't give a damn. He said, I get less than a damn.
Less than
like
a damn.
That, man.
Man, that was a good one. I never heard them get quite that real on Meet the Press. They usually pretty PC on Meet the Press. This guy wasn't having it.
Yo.
That was a good one, man. That was a good one. Look, can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I had to come back on because there's some very important announcements I need to make.
I need to get a little clearer then. Get back in your phone a little better because it's that important. We need to hear it, bro.
Well, I take. Hold a minute. What I'm going to have to do then, I'm probably going to have to.
You can
do it now. You better.
Huh?
You better. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm probably going to tell people to go to them. My Facebook page. Y'all should just Google on Facebook. Go to search. Stop Killing Us School Intergenerational Movement. And check out what we have going on. We have a brother that started marching today, Jamal Johnson. He's a school representative in the northern area. He started marching today at noon. And he's going to march all the way to Washington, D.C. He started in Philly. And he's planning to arrive there on August 28th. All these dates are significant. August 28th, of course, as we're talking about history, that's the August 28th, 1963, is the 1963 March on Washington. August 28th, 1955, is the gruesome lynching of 14-year-old Emmett Till. August 28th, we will be meeting in the D.C. area. At 1 o'clock, we're going to meet at the Congressional Caucus. That's where the marchers, or if it's one person marching, that's where he will meet. I don't know how many people are going to be marching. I know a lot of people are not going to march from Philadelphia to D.C.,
you think?
So we have one man that's going to be willing to go all the way. I'm sure there'll be people who will come and march portions of the march. I don't know how many people will be with him by the time he arrives at D.C. But the point is, this is a stop killing us message. And it's timely because everywhere we look around, people are killing us. Whether it be
racist white supremacist, whether it be a racist white supremacist who made his way to the police department, or whether it be some of us who've been systematically locked into the shackles of poverty and pushed out of school into and having the exacerbation of black self-hatred, there's always somebody killing us. And so I just want to send this shout out to Brother Jamal Johnson. I'm pretty sure he can't hear me now, but I just want you to wanted to say, for people who are taking a stand and doing things while people are saying it's time for action, some people are already taking action, are already in action mode, who just need support. And so the Stop Killing Us Solutions campaign started its march today, August 27th. We'll end up in D.C. on August 28th. You can meet us there. Go to our Facebook page. Also on August on August 28th, we're coming to District Heights, Maryland at 4 p.m. We have a program scheduled for District Heights. Hold on.
District Heights.
Trying to turn out to this.
Man, I think I'm gonna be in Pittsburgh.
Anyway, I'll give the specifics. I think we have another time before the event is up. But we'll get back. But people, also, you can go to CurtisGatewood.com, or you can go to Curtis Everett Gatewood on Facebook, Curtis Everett Gatewood. Check me out. Stop Killing Us. It's real, and there's a lot of action being taken that you need to be aware of. All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right, Curtis. Curtis, you still there, man?
Yeah, I'm here.
I need to get one question out of you, man. What do we need to do, man? I mean, what do we do as African Americans? I know you said demand the defense budget protect us.
Right.
You know that may not happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, those guys are what they're running the government, man.
Can y'all hear me? Can you hear me well?
Yeah.
We really had to put together that list of things to do because, like you said, we might not get everything on the list, but you don't stop fighting until you do. So, in other words, if you didn't get something on the list in the next 5 years, you're still fighting 5 years later. You see what I'm saying? Sometimes people think you're just supposed to hit and miss it and then forget about it after a while. But people need to understand they started fighting in 1955 during the Montgomery boycott, even though a lot of things happened during that boycott and as it was taking place. But the actual civil rights legislation, a lot of it didn't happen until about 1964, 65, 10 years later. They had to keep, you know, they had to keep going. You can't just stop. And so that's the misconception we have today. Everybody wants everything quickly. So we have to put together that list. We got to make sure that this that the defense budget is, number one, too much is going into the defense budget, taking away from things like education. And we do need to deal with the issue of reparations. They need to be on the list. I mean, you may not get it right now, but you need to deal with reparations. You need to deal with the Defense Department. We need to deal with, you know, the way that we are electing candidates now. It's, we're under this false conception that you have to become more like the evils in order to get elected. You know, we're under this notion that if you're standing for justice, you got to tone that down if you're going to be elected. We have to change that attitude. And so, therefore, we're going to have to start demanding more from our candidates on both sides of the aisle. If we don't, we're going to have to be more consistent in how we make demands. Like, for example, you got one side of the spectrum where Trump gets away with everything. He can do anything. He even said it himself. He can go right on Fifth Avenue and put a gun out and shoot somebody, and he'll still be okay. And then on the Democratic side of the aisle, everybody's walking tiptoes. Anything happens, then, you know, you're facing being thrown out of the party or thrown out of your seat or whatever. We have one extreme to the other, and we just need to be demanding justice on both sides of the aisle. You can't say Trump can do what he does. Anybody who's for women's rights should not sleep at night if Trump is in the White House. anybody who's against sexual harassment and women, assault on women, you should not be arresting while Trump is in the White House. Trump is on video. You know, so many people get allegations put against them. But Trump is on video. It's not too late to fight for that. Women, where are you? It's not too late. Don't give up on that fight.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why give up?
Yeah.
Trump has so many reasons. And see, Trump is a big problem right now. I mean, Trump, you know, at first we used to say, well, Trump just not it. You know, racism is not just Trump. That's true. But we are seeing now why. You can't just write that off and say, well, the problem just not. Trump is a problem because Trump is now giving new life to racist white supremacists. That is a dangerous thing. Man, so I'm just saying he's bringing it out. So I'm just saying we have to be more consistent in our demands. We can't just be about women's rights when it's convenient. We can't just be about, you know, folk being killed when it's convenient. We have to organize. Leon, we're thankful for what we have going on. Holler, we can come together. We have to have communities coming together. If you're not going to do something, at least talk about some solutions, and maybe you can start finding ways to make it happen. But we can't not do anything. We can't just be silent, because silence is betrayal. Neutrality, if you're neutral, you're on the side of the oppressor. And so we have to make noise. We have to demand funds being redirected toward reparations. We need to start making sure people keep talking about this thing about mass incarceration. Why you still got them locked up? Where is the legislation to let them out? We need to demand that. They need to come out. Okay, we know they were locked up when they shouldn't have been locked up. We know they were locked up for drugs while white people are being given treatment for opioids. They were locked up. So we know that now. You going to just let them stay locked up? So we have to take action. We have to make demands. And we can make a list, Leon. We can put together a list of what needs to be done, and we can go down that list, and we can make it happen and not stop until we get everything on the list. And I tell you, we probably got at least about 10 things that we can put together as a people and make sure we not stop until we get it.
Amen to that, bro. Well, you help us get that list together, man. People need to know, man, because people depending on people like you to keep us informed and guide us in the right direction. While we got you talking, man, congratulations on your bid to be the new North Carolina NAACP president. We wish you so much success on that, man. The brothers got you back.
Yep, like I said,
the brothers got you back.
I'm just running and praying that God will help us to get through it. We're in a tough time right now, so y'all just pray for us, pray for our state, pray for the NAACP everywhere, pray for all civil rights organizations and other activists, youth, young and old, traditional, grassroots, whomever, anybody who's fighting for justice now, pray for these people, pray for their strength, and pray that we can come together and make some great things happen.
God bless you, man. We're looking forward to you being the next North Carolina NAACP president, because it is a time where we need strong leadership, strong, sincere, expert, experienced leadership.
I tell you, I'm going to be calling on you guys, because I'm going to talk to you. I want to surround myself by intelligent people such as you guys here on this radio show and other parts of the country and state. Because we cannot underestimate what you guys are doing right here, right now, in trying to help people to see. Because Jesus would put it like this, you know, a lot of times we talk about how we're seeing all this negativity, how we're hearing all the bad music, we're hearing all the bad messages coming from Trump, we're hearing all the bad messages coming from Fox News, and some of these demonic commentators, Rush Limbaugh and all those guys, they're just bringing all the things that can cause you to be blind. And so this is the time when I think Jesus would say it's time that we give sight to the blind. And giving sight to the blind would mean helping to educate our people and helping them to see, remember their history, remember not only their history, but use the history that it'll take us into a better future. Yes, sir.
Right quick, Curtis, for the sake of those people listening that do not know what it takes to vote or be eligible to vote for you in the NAACP election, what does it take?
Okay.
I know you probably able to post it on your Facebook page, but you would be surprised how many people miss that.
Right, exactly right. Yeah, well, first of all, like all politics, it starts locally. So you need to check with your local branch. We have a branch of the NAACP in most counties in North Carolina. And some of those branches are inactive. So you have up until the end of this month. Actually, the time is running out. You have up until the end of this month to get your branches active, if they're not already. But all branches that are active are, by NAACP terms, in good standing. That means they have at least 50 members in their branches. That means they have paid all of their any assessments or at least satisfied those assessments with the state and national NAACP. And once you've got a branch that's in good standing, you need to join that branch. You need to be a member at least 30 days prior to being elected as a delegate. People have to be elected as delegates. Delegates are basically just people who would go to the general membership meeting, find out when they're going to have that election, and go to your general membership meeting. A lot of people probably going to do it in September at the September meeting. Some people may be doing it before then. But if, in your local towns, you need to call your local NAACP and ask, number one, we're going to be eligible to go to the convention and vote in our branches. And are you going to be able, when are you going to vote, elect your delegates to go to the convention? Because once you find that out, if you go to the general meeting, then you can have someone to nominate you. Would nominate Leon Gatewood to be a delegate to the convention. But you would have to be a member in that branch, and that branch would have to be in good standing. And then those people who are elected delegates, depending on the size of your branch, will determine how many delegates you get. Some branches, about 40, from 50 to about 99, you might have four delegates. A branch the size that might have 100 members up to maybe about 500, you might get six delegates. After you get up to about 700, or past 500, you might get eight delegates. So depending on the size of your branch, unfortunately, everybody can't just vote out across the state. So it's a delegate process similar to, you know, what you see at the conventions in how they get their nominee. And so that's how they vote.
Well, sounds like
through the delegate
sounds
process.
Like it needs to be a campaign to make sure everybody understands that. So maybe that would be one way that we can help you disseminate
exactly
that information throughout the state, make sure people understand that they just can't go up in there and vote. Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Sounds like it's harder to vote for the NAACP than it is to vote in America.
Yeah, you know, and that made it real hard for me, you know, because, you know, I'm not new at this trick. This is not my first rodeo. I was able to go into the local NAACP, and all we had to do was go out and get members and join, get them to join, and they could go and vote. All they had to do was be a member, become a member 30 days prior to the election, and they could vote. Well, that's not the case at a state election. You have to
see that would be. I'm going to suggest. I'm gonna try to get at the table when you become president and see what we can do about that. Cause it seems like once you get your NAACP card, you should just be able to vote. You don't need to be a part of a branch to vote. Why is that necessary?
Right. And again, you're right. What branches can do is anytime there are any constitutional guidelines that you consider to be in need of updating or changing, there's also a process for that. Your branch, along with the branch president and your secretary, can put together a resolution, and the resolution can be sent to the state office or the state before May. And then once the state gets those resolutions, they should have a resolution committee, and they bring those committees together and determine what resolutions that the state will want to bring forward to the national convention. And then the national convention can vote on those revolution. I know it sounds like sausage being made here, but I'm just saying there is a process for trying to make change. It's just a matter of knowing the process.
Yeah, so I'm a life member, for instance, so I can't just go up in there and vote for you because my branch may be in noncompliance.
That's correct. That's correct. And even what's very concerning with me is you can be a life member in a branch, and you can't even run for office. This was the big thing of becoming eligible to run. You can't even run for office if the branch that you're associated with is out of compliance, didn't pay an assessment, or didn't send in a certain end-of-the-year report. If that branch didn't do that, then that's where I am a member. If they didn't do it by a certain time, like by December 15 of the even year before the election, if they did not do it, it wouldn't matter how much they did it after that December 15 cutoff. If they didn't have it in order by that date, you cannot run for office. So it's a lot of technical things you have to know out here about these processes, and you'll find out why a lot of people don't end up being leaders of the organization, because a lot of times it's a technicality that you might not have known that would have kept you out.
Yeah, I think that's kind of messed up. Curtis, we appreciate you, man. We're going to be, like I said, we're going to be supporting you, man. The brother's excited about
you,
it, and we appreciate you running and appreciate the leadership you have already provided. Sir?
Oh, man. Thank you, brother. Love you guys, too, man. Thank you so much.
Good work.
Look, I'm going to be doing a meeting soon, so I would like to have some people, whether you can vote or not, I still need good minds around the table and people that can help us to maybe do some things that would certainly be in the best interest of not just only the campaign, but the overall fight for justice in North Carolina. Yep.
Yeah. Amen. All right, brothers, before we check out of here, man, I want to pay tribute to Ms. Toni Morrison. You know, I didn't know Toni Morrison had reached age 88. All the pictures I saw of her were this young lady with the afro, you know. Toni Morrison, 88.
Hair.
She's the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Toni Morrison died at age 88. She was the first African-American woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize. She won it in literature in 1993. Now, of course, she wrote the book Beloved, which won the Pulitzer Prize, and of course she did the book The Bluest Eye and stuff like that. She was a powerful sister. I've heard a lot of tributes made to her by people that have made it, and we just like to give a tribute to her at this time. God bless her soul. When people like this start leaving, man, you're just wondering, is there somebody to replace her, you know? Is there somebody there? Is there somebody coming behind? You know, it's tough, man, when we start losing our ancestors. That's why it's so important that we step up. You know, we keep trying to produce excellent young people. That's why it's so important for people like Curtis and myself and Robin and all the young people, like young brother that was in the center this morning, Brandon Smith and Jasmine Brown and those young people that were coming behind trying to make sure our young people, I like to see young people working to make sure young people do good, you know. So we're excited, you know, life is good, we're still running, everything's going to be good, man, everything's going to be alright. You know, we keep going through these tough spots in our history, but we just have to keep our hands in God's hand and make sure we stay strong, you know. God said you got to have faith, but that faith takes some work, people. We can't just wait on it. We can't sit around and just pray and wait on things to happen. We got to work while we pray. Is that right, boss?
Amen.
Yeah, we got to work while we pray. Brother, unless you guys have something else to say, we're going to have to get up out of here. Our time is up. It's been a beautiful conversation, guys. I appreciate you guys calling in and having this conversation, because these things be worrying me. Like Robert said, me and you posed a tough question today, but I'm wondering, is it too late for America, for too late for America to save itself. I want to, you know, you guys talking today, you know, kind of gave me a little, relieved a little bit of my anxiety. I appreciate that.
Hey, Leon, let's take it to the polls,
yes,
man. Let's take it to the polls. Get some folks in there that can change things. So, it's hope. There's hope.
There is hope. There is hope. Ladies and gentlemen, believe us, there is hope. You've been listening to the Brother For Real Radio Show. We're here every Wednesday at 7 o'clock p.m. We'll be back next Wednesday. We have a lot of people we're going to have on the show next week. Probably we're going to be talking about the Lion King that we're doing with Dance in Middle School. We're going to have the director on the show. We're going to have Kim Richardson and Nesbitt back. We're going to be still talking about the Big Top. Count under the Big Top with the circus thing. We've got so much going on in the village. The village is active. That's what it's going to take for us to keep our kids out of trouble, keep their minds activated, keep their minds positive. It's going to take all of that to do that, man.
Amen.
Yeah, so things in D.C., man. We out of here. We just talking now.
Hey, man, we got, we got the election. Last Wednesday this time, we were kind of getting out of here to go hear the Democratic debate. And we saw that Tulsi Gabbard blindsided Kamala Harris. She hasn't been right since. She's just kind of fallen out of
it.
Well, she was, the commentator asked Gabbard that she'd been criticizing Kamala for her attack on Biden. And so I think in our community, it was almost 50-50. Some people were kind of championing Harris for her attack. And a slight majority was saying that it was kind of a low blow to Biden because he was the front runner. And people kind of put their stock in her, in him, almost like what they did with Hillary. Well, anyway, Gabbard was not too happy about it either. And she's pretty progressive, a little outside the fringes. She's not your mainstream candidate. Very progressive in her thought and very outspoken. Well, anyway, she came in and she did a takedown on Harris. She said, when you were the prosecutor in San Francisco, you put all these black folks away and you locking up folks with marijuana, and Harris was just rattled. And she hadn't been right since. And then she took this big dive in the polls. So the race now is Biden has lead, has widened, and Elizabeth Warren has risen to second place. And Bernie is on pulling up the rear, but the Harris, who was really, people thought was going to, start challenging Biden, just really kind of fell off the grid. But that's the lesson of that was that Harris was all offense, but she didn't have a defensive plan. She did not anticipate that blindside from Gabbard, and she has not been right since. She has not been right since. So I don't know.
You know, she's always had that. That's an undercurrent, though, for her. This, as a prosecutor, with the things she did in the community. So it's coming. It was coming.
Yeah. Well, they were saying, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. A lot of people said it was karma.
Right.
You came up to Biden, but you didn't cover your rear. You didn't cover your rear.
Right. It was coming,
came.
Man. So.
Gabbard did like
and
a body slam. I mean, it was like, I was in the car. I was going home. I was trying to rush home to hear the debate, but I got there just in time. Right before I got out the car, I heard Gabbard coming after Kamala. I said, whoa. What the hell? You have to look that up, man, when you get a chance. Just Google Gabbard taking down Kamala.
Yeah,
anyway,
we'll
everything's going to be good, man. Everything's good.
I'm coming up on Sunday, huh?
Next week, I'm going to try to make the show. I'm going to be... No, that's the week after. Never mind. Yeah, no, next week. I'm going to be in Virginia Beach. I'm doing FBA training in Virginia Beach on Monday, Tuesday. I'll probably be getting back Wednesday at some point. It may not be a problem. I'm just kind of putting it out there. It may have, but I may tune in remotely or for a short period of time. And then the week after that, 2 weeks after that, I'm flying to Pittsburgh. So I'm going to be on the road here coming up in the next this month. So, but it's all good, man. It's all good.
Got you covered. Yeah, man, I'm going to be in the area. Let's see. Let me check my calendar. Hold on. Don't go nowhere. Hold on. I'm going to be in your area. Well, I'm being not really in your area, but close enough to probably, if I leave a day early, drop in. Let me see where you're going to be on this particular. I think it's the weekend of the 23rd. Hold on. I'm trying to get to my calendar. The weekend of the 24th, I will be in Richmond for the Kittredge College National Alumni Reunion.
That ain't exactly the area. It's about 2 hours.
It's like about an hour and a half, right?
If you're flying, if you're really flying, hour and a half.
So the 2 hours.
It's closer, probably closer to 2, because unless it's just a really, really no traffic, sunny day in the middle of the day, you get to D.C. probably, and by the time you take your side streets and get off the road and everything, it's going to be about an hour and a half to 2 hours, somewhere in between. But it's close. It's closer than North Carolina, let's put it that way. So keep me posted.
Carolina. So, yeah, man, so are you in the area? Are you going to be in the area that weekend?
I'm going to be here that weekend. I'm leaving that Monday, but I'll be here that weekend. Yes, I will be.
Okay, great. I'm thinking about trying to, what you got planned for your show that Friday? I'm just saying, man, I might try to get up early enough to do your show.
That would be, and you're always welcome to the show. That would be the 23rd. Oh, yeah. You'll be, that's going to be me and Danny, and yeah, It's always a seat for you, so. It's always a seat for
you. Okay, well, I'll keep you posted on that, depending on,
keep
I'm kind of moody. I'm kind of moody. I might feel different by the end. But anyway, man, I want to tell you this, man. I'm really proud of your show, man, what you're doing. It's amazing. The interest and everything that's generated by it. And I just hear people from my town talking about, your brother on that radio show and stuff. It's amazing.
I'll tell you what, Leon. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna give you a little credit on this. Remember when I first did the video, and
right.
I was still a fence sitter. I was like, yeah, that was fun, but is that gonna be the norm? Well, man, that was the ticket. That is what kicked us to another level. Because you said people want to see. You said people want to see.
They do.
Why would you want to hear when you can see? When you can hear and see.
I don't want to sit there and listen to somebody these days. Man, this is a day of technology.
Yeah, so I was. Now, me being the technology guy, I should have known that. But, you're always kind of slow when it comes to yourself. You can tell other folks this stuff, but you can't see your own stuff.
True.
And so one day I sat down, after you said that, I actually had to go back and think. I said, you know what? Let me think about this. If this wasn't me, what position would I take? I would always rather see and hear than to just hear. That's the difference between listening to the radio and listening to TV.
Yeah.
You're going to always pick TV if you can.
Every time, man. You hear the TV, and the only thing you can do is listen to it.
Yeah. It's like in the old days, folks would sit around. But look, in the old days, people would sit around and like they watched TV, they would sit around and watch the radio. And then one day, that TV came along. Nobody watched the radio anymore. And that's kind of what happened to my show. We still have a few old, loyalists that are at work or they're driving, so they listen. But now we get more people tuning in on Facebook and going back and watching the shows and commenting and giving feedback. So that was... So I'm glad you kind of encouraged me on that and gave me that feedback, because now that's just part of the show now. That's the show.
That's it.
That's the show. And we try to give it a little bit of a reality TV look by, doing a little beforehand, a little pre-show and a little after show, and people can hear us talking between the breaks. I think some folks listen in just for that.
You know, like I say, because people want to see what really goes on in a radio station, you know.
Yeah.
What is it really like?
Yeah, and they
you know,
see
you
it.
See the big mic and all that.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah, so thanks, man. Thanks.
Good.
Glad.
No problem, man.
We'll be on.
Appreciate you, brother. Like I say, just proud of you, man. I just want to let you know, man, that's good stuff. I look forward to listening in now, man. Like I said, I used to didn't, you know, it's kind of hard. It's really kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus Facebook makes it real easy. They announce it, you know, they Robert's live now and all that. You know, it's big, man.
Man.
Good stuff.
And we've got some diehard fans, too, that just tune in every week. They like, they really set their clock. And if Facebook didn't remind them, they would probably remind themselves because they're just so into the show. And but like I said, I'm humbled by it because the show has grown. We're heading into 10 years, and just the people that have hung in there, been faithful, and watched the show. So I'm glad about that. But if you're in the area,
it'll be
in May of next year.
Wow.
You know, it's tied to Pop's passing. You know, he passed in a few weeks before the show went on the air. Back, he passed in April, and the
right.
show launched in
April.
2 weeks later in May.
Well,
so it's
marketing pulpit. Okay.
Marketing pulpit, name for Pop.
I hate to say this, cause, but you got to have a big party, man. I know the name of Pop.
Yeah, man.
You got to have a big party for you.
I've been hearing it, man. I've been hearing it. I think I don't have a choice. I've been hearing it from every angle. Everybody like, you know you got to have a party, right?
Man, yeah.
There will be a party. There will be a party. So just go ahead and do a save the date. There will be a party.
Heck yeah.
I don't know when
Heck
it's going to be, where it's going to be, what venue, what type of party, but there will be a party. Just know that it's coming.
Man, yeah. All right, brother. Be careful
out
there, man.
All right. Thank you, bro. Appreciate you.